Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, welcome to Civil Defense Virginia. I'm your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center of the Civil Defense Radio Bunker Complex. We got a very special guest this week, Bruce Curley. He's the Vice President of the American Civil Defense Association, otherwise known as TACDA, at tacda.org. Bruce, hello. How are you today?
Feeling pretty good. How about you?
Good, good. Hey, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
It's an honor.
Yes, it's an honor for us. We had Jay Wimpy on our broadcast history, and we had a great show back then. But
actually, can I mention something he did that was not part of that interview?
Sure.
Jay is the guy that came up with a thumb drive that is EMP hardened, that is made out of chrome, and 5% of the memory is our coursework and our magazines. And the other 95% is for business owners and individuals to be able to copy all their data daily so that they have backup in case they have an emergency.
You know, I have one of those right here in front of me right now.
All right. Well, you can thank Jay for that. He came up with that. It has that O-ring.
Yeah.
So if you drop it in the ocean, you're out there fishing on the bay, or you drop it in water in a bathtub or anything, it still works. So yeah. It's an incredible device. And for $25, you can't beat it.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, so as the vice president of the Civil Defense Association, the American Civil Defense Association, TACDA, you've been instrumental in doing a lot of things, but our discussion today is going to be about children and civil defense. And you wrote an article back in 2018 that was in issue number one for 2018 that covers a lot of things briefly. But it covers a lot of important information. And so that's going to be the brunt of our discussion today. So can you give us first a little more background on what you bring to the table for TACDA and this subject of civil defense? And give the audience a little bit of who you are.
Sure. Basically, I got into this because it was an additional duty when I was in the Air Force. At Eglin Air Force Base, they have a massive hospital complex, and of course that area is hit by hurricanes regularly. And so I was just part of a group that each month we would drill and do exercises to get everyone out of the building just in case. And then from there, when I get out of the Air Force, I work for a company called Research Alternatives, and we had a contract to teach at the Emergency Management Institute, which is 5% of the National Fire Academy up in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And so I was a young guy at the time, probably 27, and I was dealing with senior managers that were in their 50s and 60s. And for the first 3 days, they would ignore me, although I was giving them some valuable information because they considered me a kid. But by the third day, there was always a hurricane or a fire or a chemical spill or something. So I would call that person up to the front of the room, and they would say what they learned. And then for the next 2 days, these guys, since the Feds picked up the tab, they were partying at first, but then they got serious and they learned some things which helped them. And as part of that position, I got to go all over the country to inspect emergency operations centers, which at that time were kind of in a state of free fall because nobody was paying attention to them. And every time I'd ask the guy, "Can I see your plan?" he would pull something off the shelf and the dust would fall off it from 20 years. And so,
that's terrible.
And every one of them had the same statement that, "Well, yeah, we understand, the Feds want this, the Feds want that, but they don't understand that out here, our problem is not nuclear war. Our problem is a flood or a fire or something that they don't know about. And so, yeah, they give us the money and they want that plan, but we really don't have time for it." And so it was kind of an education for me. And at the time, I was also writing for a publication called Hazard Monthly. So I did a very long article about how FEMA operates, because all these guys, that's all they wanted to know. All the emergency managers, these 4,700 emergency operations centers, were concerned about how they could get more money. And so I explained to them in the article about how the many, many, many layers of FEMA and how Congress comes into it and the politics involved. And so anyway, from there, I went on to, I guess, the World Bank, worked there for 9 years. And it's always something I just did on the side, basically just educating myself. And then eventually I became a technical writer. And as part of that, I got to do business continuity operations plans and emergency response plans, because nobody else knew how to do it. So for these companies, and I enjoyed it. So it was kind of fun. It was part of the education. And then I started to write articles, and TACTA picked up one of the articles. And then basically after the first article said, hey, would you be willing to be on the board of directors? And I said, yeah, sure. Sounds good. And so ever since, probably that's 15 years ago, I've been writing civil defense articles for the Journal of Civil Defense. So that's kind of my background in a nutshell.
All right. So you are currently the vice president of TACTA, and you help manage that organization and its vision. And can you give us any idea of some of the things that that TACTA is doing right now, that or looking to do in the very near future, that that our friends out there that are listening can look forward to?
Sure. The most important thing, you're correct, and I kind of do the detail stuff, but it's nice to actually be able to implement tactics and strategy for how to help American families deal with natural man-made disasters. And the wonderful thing that happened was TACTA was in trouble. It's a 401c and it's, you know, bootstrapped, and the money really wasn't coming in. And fortunately, we had a person come in 2 years ago, Roseanne Hasseret, and she and I have just had kind of a Vulcan mind meld where, you know, she has a vision for where it can go. And she's an accountant, very talented accountant, and that's what they needed, was somebody to manage the books and the money end of things. Because something you should know about TACTA is the support, a lot of support over the years. And, it, you know, when it moved from Florida to Utah, was they have something called METTAG, METTAG. And I highly encourage anybody out there that's a firefighter, emergency management technician, police officer, whatever, but anybody has to tag bodies or has mass casualty events or all police departments, fire departments need them now because of the way the Antifa BLM riots and killing have been going on. And I participated in many drills and exercises, like, say, EPLEX over at the airport over here, the Baltimore Washington International Airport. And the METTAG is a wonderful item. And so I encourage anybody to go to TACTA.org. We have what's called a survival store. And so Roseanne and I have been vetting products, and it's kind of think of as like a prepper survival store. So it doesn't have shovels and pickaxes and food and all that kind of stuff. What it does have is items like that thumb drive or the METTAG or water bricks, where you can build a shelter out of these Lego-like water bricks. So there's a survival store on the site, which is critical because people are searching, families are searching. I know it from talking to lots of fathers in my area, and they need these items, but they don't know where to start. And so our stuff is ethical, it's moral. You buy a product, it's going to last, it's been tested. And so that is one piece of it. The other piece is the Journal of Civil Defense, which I just uploaded, I don't even know, 42 years or 45 years of the Journal of Civil Defense with Roseanne. And so all that information is now there. And the fascinating thing about civil defense is it comes around in cycles. So the stuff they were doing in the Old Testament is the same stuff they were doing in World War II, is the same stuff they're doing now. The principles and the strategies are the same. The technology changes, but people stay the same. You're always dealing with people. And the strategies, you just have to kind of keep up with that and the new technology. And so the magazine is basically a rolling way to do that. It comes out twice a year. It's what we can manage. And so say in the issue where I did the article, Protect and Defend My Future, Children in Civil Defense, You also have simple things like PTSD in you, EMP hardened solar energy, emergency water storage, and cracking walnuts for survival. So, yeah, so it's neat. It's pretty, and that's what I enjoy, because you have all these other authors who are into it, but they know areas that I can't possibly know. But through the Journal of Civil Defense, at least I can get familiar with it. And so when I'm doing things like, you know, I explained before the call, I met with a cybersecurity guy that works for under contract, the NSA. So I can give him kind of non-traditional ways of thinking and strategies that those guys don't come up with, because, you know, they're in those skiffs and those little rooms talking to each other all the time, and they don't get out to the wider world.
Right.
And so I'm kind of a liaison between, you know, guys like that and the average person. Mm. And so, and that's where, to get back to the vision of the tactic, if you look at our website 5 years ago, 3 years ago, it was rough. It was really rough. It was clumsy. It was hard to use. And so Roseanne went to GoDaddy, and they worked together to create what I think is a sterling, just outstanding website where the search engine works. When you go in there, if you want to learn about MedTag, you can learn about MedTag. If you want to learn about the coursework, and, you know, by the way, the coursework that's on there has been written and rewritten and tested and exercised and used for the past, what, 60 years? I don't even know now. So it's real deep. And the wonder of it, and, you know, I'm a writer, so I love plain English, and everything in the coursework is in plain English. So any mom, any dad can look at it and immediately know what to do. And so that piece of it's there. Then you have the people who are connected to Tactic, and I'd like to highlight one. Kylene and her husband have this wonderful site called Provident Prepper.
Yes.
And she wrote a book, 400 pages long, everything you could possibly need to know about prepping is in there. And they do these wonderful YouTube videos, probably two or three a week, like when the toilet paper shortage happened. they had 10 alternatives to toilet paper. You know, and Americans have just become so fat and lazy that, you know, they're in panic because they can't get toilet paper. And you had those ridiculous pictures of, you know, guys in cars that they couldn't even see outside. They had so much toilet paper in there. And yet all they had to do was cut up cloth and wash it and reuse it. There were lots of ways which, of course, are familiar in the third world and the second world, but we've kind of forgotten how to do it up here in Rome. So anyway, so that kind of stuff is on there. That's what I'm saying. It's like all these experts add their... Then there's, we spent a lot of months doing correct search engine optimization terms so that people can find exactly what they're looking for. And so you just enter the term, and then you'll have a number of old issues come up, and then you can explore it and go through it. And the fascinating thing for me, being a decision maker, is the fights that go on between Congress and FEMA and funding, and, you know, they fund it like crazy, and then they don't give them a dollar the next year. And so all that's, it's all there. I study history. So for me, it's very interesting to see, okay, you know, the issues they had back in the 50s are the issues we have today.
The same thing.
Yeah,
they starved civil defense, and they starve the FEMA.
The
only thing they make sure that's funded is their bunker complexes. That's one of the things they make sure has proper funding.
Well, see, and that's amusing to me. I mean, it's kind of tragic amusing because here's the thing. It's just like preppers get all caught up in the metaphysical, the material, and yet none of that does any good without having the knowledge or the skill stack to be able to do what you need to do when you need to do it. And, you know, it goes back to a special forces guy I know from Vietnam that I'll never forget when he said, the only thing you can carry across a border is what's inside your head. So I try to keep inside my head, you know, what I need for survival rather than, and you know, my basement, I just went through all my supplies. And actually, I wrote to Kylene, and I said, much to my shame, because in Private Prepper, she always talks about how you have to rotate your stock. And I'm finding MREs in 2010 that are mush, Navy MREs in 2015 that are falling apart, water that expired in 2018. So, you know, basically, I had to throw out, poor trash guy, I had to throw out like half of my supplies. But the good thing is, you know, I came up with newer stuff that's even better. So,
yeah, we've had the Provident Preppers on our show 4 or 5 times. Matter of fact, our Christmas show was with them talking about community.
Great. So,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, we're very familiar with Jonathan and Kylene Jones. They're very, very special people to us.
And I've lost count of the kids. They have like 10 or 12 kids or something. and the great thing is, in those videos, they always include their kid, you know, and they have a great sense of humor, which of course is vital when you're teaching, is if you can get it across through humor, then people actually learn it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm happy to hear that, because they deserve a much, much wider audience.
Yeah. Matter of fact, our second largest show was one that they did with us. It was based on one of their videos about the coming crisis. And that was our second largest show that we've done so far. And it was a fantastic show.
Yeah. And did you see where they went off the grid for a month?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, how many Americans with one kid could do that? And they did it with like a dozen kids.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, at least three in the house. I'm not sure how many more were around, but they're almost empty nesters now.
And you know, she's dealt with her own issues. I mean, because of the driving out there in the mountains, she lost a daughter who, you know, tragically flew off one of those horrible ravines. And you know, she's had, but they're just wonderful people. And and their husband, I don't know anybody who knows more about purifying water than he does.
Yeah. Well, he's an engineer, so he knows a lot.
And my sons are both sound engineers, and I work with 25 engineers every day. And engineers rule the world; it's just nobody knows it.
Yeah, yeah, unsung heroes.
Without that, nothing gets done.
Yeah. So let's get into this article here. Like I said, it's short, but it's got some very good nuggets in there. It starts out with a brief definition of civil defense. It's a little bit different than the one that we have on our website, but
that's fine.
It says that civil defense includes all the tasks undertaken to ensure the safety of citizens and to protect them from attack. Chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear, as well as from the negative impacts of natural disasters. And that's essentially what civil defense is. It's preparing the community, the people in the homes, neighborhoods, and communities to be prepared for any kind of disruption, whether it's natural or man-made.
Yeah. Are you going to read the second paragraph?
Oh, yeah. Okay. At the very core of civil defense is the protection of children. In the United States, this is mostly done by unpaid volunteers in support of frontline emergency personnel with oversight by the government.
Yeah, and I think that's accurate because of the thousands of fire departments and police departments and EMTs and nurses and people like me that are out there. We don't get any attention. You know, like the corporate media is always talking about FEMA, which is, you know, that's like talking about the Department of Defense. It just doesn't make any sense because it's tens of thousands of bureaucrats. Now, if they got into the detail, that'd be fine. And, you know, I understand, FEMA creates courses once in a while and all that kind of stuff. But the fact is that lots of volunteers are out there getting it done. And so that's why I included that as a second paragraph. And, you know, you can argue with any of those words because they're all mine.
No, it's good. It's good. I created my definition too.
It's not an easy thing to describe. You know, it's a huge field. It's like, let's talk about Christianity. You know.
Yeah. I created my definition as well, and that's on the website on the homepage. If anybody wants to go and look, but what the media has done, and it's been a disservice to the American people, is focus too much on FEMA, especially when it's politically advantageous for them to do that, like during Hurricane Katrina.
Right.
And these last few against President Trump. But it's not FEMA that we should be concerned about. It's our local emergency managers and the emergency management processes in our cities and counties. That's what we need to be focused on, and having our own lives straight so that we can, one, be prepared, two, survive during the event and afterwards, and then start helping to pick up the pieces. That's what it's all about.
And to piggyback on what you're saying, you always hear this statement that all politics is local. Well, all civil defense is local.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I don't know why they don't ever, you know, the corporate media. I mean, I gave up on the corporate media a long time ago, but yeah, that's something they never really talk about, which is why when you have an emergency event, we found out years ago that you can't order men to go out there and endanger their lives without letting them talk to their families to make sure their families are secure first. So in any of my training, I've always emphasized that before these men go and save other people, they need to go home and make sure their families are secure. And that way, when they get to the event, they can be 100% dedicated to saving people and saving property. Otherwise, they're always worried about which. And this the proof for me was 9/11.
Yeah,
I mean, everything I was involved in 9/11. It's like you can't do that to people. You just can't order them out there to do things without letting them make sure their family is good.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So you know, that's a principle that goes way back.
Well, Katrina backs that up, because what did a lot of the law enforcement and fire do? They took care of their families. They left town with their families, because that's more important than your job. You know, it goes God, family, and then your job.
Well, I would like to expand on that. I received my NIMS training at the Carroll County Emergency Operations Center. And the guy who taught me was actually detailed to New Orleans, because he's a helicopter pilot. And he said the only two words he never heard when he took people off those roofs was thank you. And that if he said, think about it, they're being told for a month, it's a storm of biblical proportions, And nobody got up out of that ninth ward and walked 9 miles over that bridge to get to safety.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's what it goes back to is there's this attitude in this country that I'm owed, I'm entitled. The government has to do this for me. The government has to do that for me. And it's very sad because that's resulting in people being killed and injured.
Yes, it is. It is. It's malfeasance on the part of government not having proper civil defense organizations to help educate and train the local population in the cities and counties. And it's at the city and county level that this needs to be done. It's not the state level. It's not the federal level, because they're too far removed.
No, absolutely. That's why I moved. I used to live in Germantown, Maryland, which is Montgomery County, which is kind of a commie county. And basically, 9/11 happened, and you know, I had the Section 8 houses with the drug dealing, and I had a boss going in down the street and all that kind of stuff. And so I made a very quick decision to get my family out of there. And so within 3 weeks, I was in Montgomery County, Maryland. I'm sorry, I was at Mount Airy, Maryland, in Carroll County, which has you know, the largest source of fresh water on the East Coast. I have a well, so I have my own water. Mm-hmm. I can walk to a grocery store. Four or five grocery stores, plus secondaries, plus tertiaries, within, and anomalies. I can get to all that within 1 to 5 miles.
Oh, that's good.
And everybody who lives here is intelligence, law enforcement, police, ex-military. So basically, it's a group of people who understand emergencies and what to do. And that's who I wanted to live among. And you know, I have to credit my wife, because for years, 25 years, her aunt lived here and she wanted us to move here. But I kept saying, hey, no, that's way out in the country. I'm not going that far out. And then I realized, no, that's where we need to be, you know, because I had two young sons at the time. And so we moved here, and it's just been wonderful. It's farm country. Like, you know, all day yesterday, a guy was going up with a massive grain truck. And I mean, massive. And on the side, it says the Trump Grain Train 2020. And so I gave him cards and I gave him magazines. You know, I stopped him in the middle of the road. And it's like, that's the kind of people I live among now. You know, so I'm not worried about it. Like, in fact, if you go to my blog, I wrote a letter to vets about a month ago. And I just said to them, you know, concentrate on Christmas, concentrate on shopping for Christmas and enjoying Christmas. Because this thing's taken care of. You know, the vets have it under control, and they do. I mean, I've spoken to enough of them over the past month or two where I'm confident that they're not going to pull off their coup, and they're not going to pull off burning down the American civilization.
Yeah. Well, we got a little off topic.
Sorry about that. But, go ahead. You can redirect it.
Yeah. So, you know, you give a little brief history of civil defense and, you know, from World War II to today.
Yeah, that was hard to write because it's a lot of history.
It is. It is. It's a lot to condense. There's a book out there. Raven Rock by Garrett Graff. This book is 500 some pages, and it chronicles very well the history of civil defense and how it transitioned into FEMA and all that. And I highly recommend that book to anybody. I'll have a link to it on.
And FEMA these days is under DHS, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's another layer of bureaucracy.
It is. And, you know, we had at the beginning of this administration, we had a really good administrator for FEMA. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of experience, but because of the political environment, he was targeted.
Wow.
And so it, you know, he's not there anymore. There's another guy in charge and I can't even remember what his name is, but you know, I don't really care too much about FEMA except for some materials that they may produce and the training that they have on their website for people. But that's about all I care about.
I've actually tried to open up a back channel to the White House. And so for the past 4 years, I've been sending them strategies and the magazine and some other things. And I don't know if it may have worked because I figured out pretty quick that if you send it to Donald Trump, who knows where it goes. But if you send it to Melania, you get a nice letter back. And so,
right?
Right. And so I've gotten a couple nice letters from her. And, you know, as part of the Be Best thing, I sent her the Children in Civil Defense and she really liked it. So who knows, you know, maybe she'll get it done.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe we ought to have a letter writing campaign. Hear that, everybody? Let's start letter writing to Melania and see if we can't get a new American civil defense structure. Where did I hear that before?
Well, actually,
that's the subtitle for my guide that I wrote.
That's funny because 6 weeks ago, I sat down and it was just like a vision letter where the Holy Spirit kind of stuff where it was wonderful. It was like 4 a.m. till 5. I got it all out and then I edited it and polished it and sent it to him. But I gave him a pretty solid strategy and I hope they take the advice, you know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry.
We're on the same page. I mean, I just had a different approach. You know, the way I'm always in the background. I don't like to be up front in any of this. I don't like the political stuff. And so what I try to do is be an influencer very quietly that people can have coffee with. And not worry a month from now that it's going to be in the media. So
yeah,
and that's the role I play.
Yeah, I don't. The only role I'm playing publicly is this one right here. So, so you know the messaging that media and some politicians has been that, you know, we don't need anything. We don't need civil defense because we've got FEMA and all this.
They've always said
they talk about.
Yeah, if you go through all those old issues, they're always saying that. That's nothing new. Well, they've said that from World War II till today.
Yeah, but they're talking about continuity of government. They talk about continuity of operations for government, and they talk about continuity of business. You know, and then they have this buzz phrase out there called community resiliency. Well, all that is business continuity.
Right.
It's not continuity of community. Which is what I term it, because that's what we need.
The businesses are already doing it. Like when I worked at Transamerica in Baltimore, I updated their business continuity plan, and they had written it in 2015 because, if you remember, there was a serious threat of a pandemic in 2015.
Yeah,
and so insurance companies basically do a lot of really, like USAA, my insurance company has really good disaster management material on their site, and so the government doesn't even need to get involved in that part of it. What they need to do is be an umbrella that can coordinate it when things go down. And, you know, if you know anything about it, it's, you know, they failed at 9/11 horribly. And sadly, a lot of those lessons have been forgotten over the past 20 years in the government, not in the private sector.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, I would say even in some areas of the private sector, because they have... We have a just-in-time mentality in America, and it's affected our ability to remember some of the events of the past, especially in our public media.
Well, I was talking to this cybersecurity expert yesterday, and I brought a letter from Norman Schwarzkopf that he sent me. I sent him a strategy way back during Desert Storm, and he sent me a really nice letter. Nicely, he sent it like 4 days before they commenced hostilities because he wanted to thank me. And so I said to him, you know, I'm looking at him. He has like a blank expression. I said, you know, Desert Storm, right? He's there now. And I said, wait a minute, you never learned about Desert Storm? And this guy's 25 years old. You know, so it's like, oh boy. And he's one of the hopeful ones. I mean, this guy is actually brilliant and you know, hardworking, does great work with cybersecurity. And so what about the rest of them? They're just playing games all day long, you know, instead of learning. It's like, wow. we may have a whole lost generation.
Yeah, that's possible. It's mainly because of our education system has been taken over.
Oh yeah, communist.
By an ideology that it's sad.
Even in my county, you know, which is a rural county, the communist unions run it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if there's a union, they're part of a larger strategy.
Yeah, my brother's a union lawyer in Philadelphia, so I'm very familiar with how they work.
Yeah,
and I don't like them.
Yeah. Well, you know, your article here has a thing here where it says the elite, like the ones in Silicon Valley, those billionaires there, they have survival communities ready. And if this is not contemporary civil defense project, you don't know what is.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of articles out there. All you got to do is a little bit of the search on Uncle Google, and you can find.
No, don't ever use Google. Don't ever use Google. Well, use StartPage or use DuckDuckGo or use the other 12 excellent search engines that are out there. But try. I know you have to once in a while, but you know, avoid Google as much as possible. They're so corrupt.
Yeah, but you know, there's been. And I don't know how many I've read over the last couple of years. There's a lot of articles, and you know, the elite, they're investing in these offshore communities, or they have these places down in New Zealand, you know, as if living on a volcanic island is protection against any kind of natural threat, you know.
Well,
it just doesn't make sense.
Well, they know what they're doing. I mean, if you notice, Hollywood always mocks preppers. It always mocks civil defense. It always mocks anybody who prepares. But quietly, they invest billions of dollars in survival communities. The one in New Zealand is for the Silicon Valley elite. The one in Missouri, that massive underground facility with hundreds of condos and just a total luxury resort. And they're all over. Switzerland has them. So it's really interesting. There's this elite, and they do it for themselves. Well, much like, think about it, the federal government for years has all these facilities in West Virginia for them, not for the average person that wants to get in there. So
they're all over the country.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's this double standard or epoxy, or whatever you want to call it, has bothered me for years. And that's why I have such a mission to help average Americans, you know, your average mom and dad, with preparing, because the elites have always prepared. You know, I grew up in Philadelphia, and way back the industrialists in Philadelphia always went down to Cape May. And I only got to grow up in Cape May. Like, you know, I'm a working class kid, but I got to go there because my Uncle Frank, when he was killed in his B-24 off Ha Jima on February 10th, 1945, the government sent my grandmother a check for $7,500, and she kept putting it in the collection basket for 2 years. And finally, the priest talked her into buying one of those Victorian mansions in Cape May that didn't cost much at the time. Because at that time, Cape May was actually declining. But of course, it's come back, and now it's a, you know, very, very wealthy community. And so the people that are there, I've observed them over the years, and they'll always be protected. You know, they have their yachts. They can jump on those yachts at any time and go out into international waters. So, you know, but what about the poor people left behind? And so that's my mission. And that's why I mentioned it in here, because very often people will say, civil defense, you know, nobody, you know, that was nonsense. It was those shelters people built in their basements nobody used, and the food went bad. And they don't understand it. Like when I was at the University of Pennsylvania, the dorm I lived in had 5 levels underground, and that was an air raid shelter. And so we used to go down and study there. And in those air raid shelters, they still had the massive bins with the crackers and the water. Of course, all the drug addicts had broken in and gotten all the heroin ampules. But the fact is that there was a massive effort back then, because people understood that thermonuclear war was a possibility. Now, if you surveyed Americans today, I would be surprised if 1 out of 1,000 thought it was a possibility. Now, it is. You know, they don't understand. I mean, when I was in the Air Force, I remember the last day I looked at that flight line, I was like, this weaponry is unbelievable. I mean, if this is ever unleashed. And the other myth is people think nobody survives after a nuclear war. And in fact, most people will survive.
Yeah, just like in Japan, there was a lot of people survived.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of propaganda around that.
Right.
But You know, we really never did get to our topic, and we're fast out of time here.
Well, that's all the more reason for people to go to the Tactus site and subscribe to the magazine and to look it up for themselves. How's that sound?
Yeah. Plus, I'm going to put a link to this 2018 edition of the Journal of Civil Defense in the show notes. So you'll have to go to that and check it out.
Can I do the topics real quick so your people know?
Sure. Go ahead.
Developing a plan, building a civil defense community, planning for medical needs, stockpiling supplies, storing clean water, educating children, making it fun, internet resources, and why civil defense for children matters.
Yeah.
So those are the topics.
Great. All right. Well, it's been great having you on. And civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, on Twitter at civil_def_radio, and our new YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And you'll get a lot of information there too. So I wish to thank Bruce for being on the show again. I especially want to thank you, our friends who are listening to us on a regular basis. I really, really appreciate you being with us this week. So please.
And I'd like to say amen, brother, to everything you said at the end there.
Thank you. Thank you. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.